Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Kara Olson, Chief People Officer for Ellenbecker Investment Group. Ellenbecker Investment Group is located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94 between Highway 164 and Highway F in Ridgeview Corporate Park and in the Village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank Building across from Winkies. We also service clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. Visit ellenbecker.com for more details. Today, I have the pleasure of having Rose Foss today as our guest. Rose is the chair and founder of Fast Forward Consulting Group. She's an author of numerous leadership books, is a natural facilitator, dynamic speaker, transformational leader, and I'm just really excited to have her on the show today. Welcome, Rose.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you. We're, you know, I'm excited to really kind of jump in, being in human resources and in the people field for over 30 plus years. I've always been really intrigued and curious about individuals' career paths, where their journey really takes them. And you just have a really fascinating story and have had the opportunity to work with numerous executive teams, leaders from Fortune 500 companies, and have been instrumental in transforming businesses. And so I thought we could begin and really talk about storytelling and leadership in your journey. And so I'm curious how you really moved from the corporate role to building Fast Forward.
Yeah, it actually happened in corporate. I started my career early on as an entrepreneur, and then I ended up at Xerox Corporation in its heyday. We were $1,000 a share back then. And I guess 20 years in, Anne Mulcahy became the first female CEO. And she had asked me if I'd be willing to come over to corporate and do this role of the chief transformation officer. At that time, I think it was 1993, nobody even knew what the word transformation meant.
Right. And
it was not in the lexicon, neither was empowerment, by the way. It wasn't even in the dictionary. So I kind of said, no, I don't think so. And I was running a large region, P&L, close to $1 billion in revenue. And I liked having a measurable position and leading people and being engaged in the business. And I'd never been in the HR part of things because Anne actually went from the business to HR and then ultimately became the CEO. So she said I wasn't asking.
You gotta love that, right? Not asking.
I wasn't asking. I was, but I wasn't, Rose. I really need you to come in because you're the one person that, you know, started a lot of new businesses here. And I think that you could help us. That actually was the genesis of what became Fast Forward. I always say I went to corporate reluctantly. I got there, and as I began to travel beyond my world and see product, engineering, HR, finance, legal, all the corporate roles and everything it took to perform those roles, and I always saw, quote unquote, a revenue generating person as the only people that counted.
Sure.
And what I began to realize is that everybody in their own way has line of sight to the customer and that these enabling roles are critical. And I had a whole new appreciation for IT, finance, HR, engineers, just everybody that had to get in line to make it work. So I renamed the position, or I created a position called the Center for Business Transformation. Mm-hmm. And I began to help big clients internally who were trying to make major transformations. And after a year, actually at the time, Anne was still as the chief HR person. And at the end of a year, Xerox ran into some trouble with our leadership team. And they asked Anne, the SEC came in, and it's all in my book, you know, and sure, they got exposed for mortgaging leases and doing bad things. It was all in Fortune magazine. And Anne came into the picture, and basically they said, if you can pay our fines, then you can be the CEO. And so she did. And I, at that point in time, made a decision that I probably would make a change. Gartner called me out of the blue, and I went there, and I stayed for a year. And then they went through a series of different events, and I realized it was time to start my own business. And that's how I ended up. I took a classically trained engineer from Gartner. I always say he's tall, attractive, wore glasses, had a great accent, and he was very, very smart. Mm-hmm. And because I was commercial and he was engineer, I felt like the combination would be great. And so I asked him if he would like to join with me, because Gartner was going through a lot of turbulent change. And he wasn't sure. He was scared, you know.
Sure.
I'm kind of reversed. Do we want to? And I said, well, I have a client to get started with. And can you do this? And I said, yes. And that was the beginning. And so that happened in 2001. And today it's 2004. We're 20 strong. And he's a co-CEO now with David Frost, who came out of Wall Street after 20 years.
Nice. Isn't that, thank you for just sharing your story. It was so interesting. And just even at the time, when you think about creating even the center of transformation, you know, at an organization, and things that just weren't at that time. And so really unique. And then how you saw the things that you saw to say, I want to create my own. How do you, it's being now 20 strong, you know, 20 years later, how did you find the right talent, right? We talk a lot how important people are and the difference that can make. How did you find the right talent for Fast Forward?
So the one thing that I realized, even when I did the Center for Business Transformation, I realized I needed people that came from different disciplines to make that work. So I got an anthropologist from Park, with the famous Park, Palo Alto Research Center. I brought in a finance person who was real estate and finance, because spaces and the way people worked mm-hmm. mattered. And I started to figure out where these different disciplines could then come together and form a more cohesive way of looking at transformation. Gavin and I were really the Gavin and Rose show from 2001 through maybe the first 5 years. Mm-hmm. Because we pulled in a staff assistant that could do some of the, you know, appointments and things of this nature. And we got an office, but we were really kind of just us. We were doing everything, you know, sure. making the product, delivering the product, working with clients. I think the most important thing that I learned in this experience early on, I remember being in our first office, the post office. And we were in an elevator. I was in the elevators weren't working. And it was, believe it or not, we had started the business in July, and that September was 9/11. I was supposed to meet the head of research for Estée Lauder out of Canada, MAC. And mm-hmm. they were coming from Canada here. And Estée Lauder had just acquired MAC. And I was supposed to meet them in their offices in New York. And the gentleman said, can't now, because they put everybody from downtown, uptown. And it was a mess downtown. Mm-hmm. So I'm in this, for better lack of a way of saying it, this bookie joint kind of office above the post office. The elevator smells, the rug smells, it's like all bad. And it was my first and Gavin's first real foray into meeting a client mm-hmm. and starting the business. It was our first client. I remember being there at night. You probably read about this in the chocolate conversation, my first book, but I ripped up the rug and the carpet and breaking nails and, you know, and laying on the bottom was a newspaper with Anne on it being called the Wall Street Darling. And I thought, what have I done? I had a breakdown. I literally sat down in that elevator and just wept. My husband came, it was late at night, and he saw me there. He walked in, he thought maybe I'd been mugged, and he said, what's going on? And then he lifted me up and he said to me, I pointed to the paper, and he said to me, no, you have talent and skills. This isn't about your title or what you did or what you didn't do. And yes, you lived a charmed life. Well, right now you're starting from scratch, but you have talent.
Right.
So when you ask that question about talent, I think from that day forward, and we had a very successful meeting, at the end of the day, I realized when Gavin and I were in the conversation with the client, we were able to bring our best selves to that conversation, our skill set and our talent. And I began to realize that the props are great, but they're not what leads you to do what you do. So every person I picked from that day forward had to have that level of grit.
Sure.
That willingness to persevere. It's not that you're feeling, you know, confident all the time, because you're not, but that you were willing to put your best self out there and take the risk.
Sure.
So found talent, to be honest with you, I looked more for passion and drive than experience and the blue chip resume.
Sure.
And so we hired people that had skill and competency, but were driven to do something unique and wonderful. And to this day, I would say our culture is shaped by that.
I was just going to say that, Rose, right? That had to just absolutely shape the culture of Fast Forward.
We have such a diverse culture, and it's naturally diverse. We have Asian, we have people of color, we have women, we have men, we have gay, we have straight, but everybody there has one unifying purpose, and that is good people doing good work with good people.
Right. That's definitely a defining moment, right, of the type of environment and culture and how you can be successful together. Thank you so much for sharing that. You know, when we return, Rose will share her insights on leadership and finance. Do finance-focused individuals make good people leaders, right? We will learn more after a short break. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Kara Olson, Chief People Officer for Ellen Becker Investment Group. My guest today is Rose Fass, Chair and Founder of Fast Forward Consulting Group. She's also an author of numerous leadership books, a natural facilitator, dynamic speaker, and transformational leader. And so we are back to talk a little bit more about finance and leadership. So through your experiences, Rose, you've worked with many different types of leaders in all different industries and disciplines. And so I want to talk a little bit more about finance and finance leaders. In your opinion, do finance people make good leaders?
So here's an interesting, and I'll tell it like a story. About 5 years in, we were working with Verizon Wireless when it was so hot, and they were just coming into their own with the wireless offering, the mobile. And we were going around working with a number of different teams and large senior teams. And I noticed that every time a finance person got up, basically I was looking at eye charts and their laptop on a slide, as I put it. Mm-hmm. And people were afraid to ask questions, and there was no real story or there. So storytelling is very critical. It's what makes people remember things. So I went around and I sent out a pre-work to all of the finance people. And I said, when you get up and present, I want you to present finance in a Sesame Street simple way. And I want you to share it like a story so that people can remember what's going on. So for example, if what your growth numbers equate to is the population of a given city, talk about that.
Sure.
And I gave him just an example. And I'll never forget this. We went out to Atlanta, Georgia. I was sitting in the room there, and one of the finance people got up and he showed a football player and the football player's salary. Mm-hmm. And he went on to say, so this $2.5 million salary represents the growth that we've had in our, and then he told this whole story around it. And it was very charming. And I got a lot of people to do that. And I went to another external meeting where one of the big companies, which used to be Computer Associates, and then they changed their name to CA, came in and showed 45 slides to explain why Verizon would be a good partner for them. Mm-hmm. And I said to them at the end, you've got two opportunities here. And they said, what? I said, well, slide 44 said that Verizon Wireless could be your pitch candy. Mm-hmm. And your value proposition is you're an alternative to big and painful. Mm-hmm. The big Oracle enterprise resource planning transformations. You can come in the messy middle and do something that's kludgy, but works.
Sure.
And they all started laughing in the room. And the guy looked at me and he said, I like that. We're an alternative to big and painful. So I think whether you're in finance, you're an engineer, you're in technology, you can be a good leader from any discipline, Kara. Mm-hmm. It's how you present who you are, what you stand for, and make it an experience for people where they can honestly be drawn into the conversation because you're telling a story.
Right.
So I'll say one last thing on this. I was working with one of the women who said, the iPhone is eating my lunch. And I said, okay, how much churn have you gotten as a result of the iPhone? And she said, oh, about 17%. I said, it's not 50. She said, no, it's not. I said, what's your next biggest problem with churn? 9% customer experience. They feel like getting a phone from us, this is years ago, they're mm-hmm. much better, but getting a phone from us is like going into the motor vehicles. And I said, okay, so that you can do something about. Talk about 1,000 customers left us yesterday. They had been with us for more than 10 years mm-hmm. and they went to another vendor and they got another phone, and we can't afford to lose those customers. Talk about it in real terms. So when you speak about finance, you mm-hmm. have to make it the way a realtor tries to talk somebody into buying a house that's more expensive than they can afford. What do sure. they do? They right. put you in the house. They tell you about the party you're going to have, or the great right. dinner, or who you're going to entertain, or how the kids are going to love to play in that backyard. And that story becomes part of the impetus for why you want to buy that house. Right.
Right. Right. So, well, that whole visualization. Right. And
right.
you could see yourself in that house. You could
right.
see yourself
right.
Having that party and that
right.
story, the powerful story and storytelling and how that can change. Right. And
absolutely.
I don't know how much we think
finance
about that.
People can do that. Finance mm-hmm. people can do that better than most, and they can be extraordinary at it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think, you know, as really any presenter, you said, as you said, in from any industry, not including the power of the storytelling and the impact that has on your audience, your client, you know, your employees, right, across the board. It really helps that connection, I think, way deeper.
And customers like it too. Mm-hmm. What did Stephen Jobs say? Mm-hmm. I'll give you 1,000 songs in your pocket.
Sure, right? Who wouldn't want that?
Immediate, right? So I once said to an investor who was being very bureaucratic in a meeting mm-hmm. and arguing about the economies of scale and going on and on and on. And everybody was like drone on. And mm-hmm. I looked at him and I said, now I know when your mom delivered you, her hope for you was greater than you just circulating capital and talking about money. You got a bigger purpose than that. What might that be? I think it's critically important that we understand that, that when we're speaking about numbers, regardless of what we're talking about, that we have to be human.
Right.
Leadership is strictly, Kara, about being human.
It sure is. Well, and that was going to really be my next question for you, Rose, is I read your latest book, and I love the title, Leadership Conversations. And as you were talking, right, leadership is about being human. You know, what do these conversations really look like, and how can we all improve, or those nuggets that we need to think about, you know, because these discussions are so important.
What they don't look like is a dueling monologue
Sure.
where I get my point across and you get yours across and then I get my point across. That is not a conversation. A conversation starts with CO, co-versing in a environment where there's give and take, there's listening, there's building off of what Kara just said, there's Kara building off of what Rose just said. And it begins to expand and grow from there. A leadership conversation requires two people to participate in it. And just because you're the leader doesn't make you the one who knows. So you can learn a lot from people. And the idea is to listen more than you talk. And that's not easy for people. So I tend to feel that good conversations have more questions than responses, that they give a person to expand their thinking, and that they allow for a different point of view, even if it doesn't line up with your point of view. So, my dad, God rest his soul, he was a former Marine, he was a published poet, an executive, and he was conversant in the Romance languages. He cared very much that people got gotten. He used to say to me, Rose, if you have to shout to get your point across, you've lost your ability to hold up your side of the argument. And it comes to mind every time I turn on a news channel. And so I believe that we can improve the quality of the conversations that we are having with people. And you don't have to come to the conversation knowing everything. You can come with more questions than answers if you're a leader. And people appreciate that. So I say that the leadership conversation, and Bill McDermott actually gave me this line, is about making bold change one conversation at a time. Zelensky's done a pretty good job of that from the moment that he had gotten stuck with what was going on. Whatever you agree with on the Ukraine, here was a comedian who became a leader, who was asked if he wanted to escape from his country, and he turned around and he said, no, I don't need a ride. Please just send me some ammunition so you can help me save my country. And he's right out there in front. The leader says, I'll go first. He's had wonderful conversations with people. So that's my statement on that.
No, I appreciate that. You know, I think that's even in your book you reference, you know, that leadership happens in the conversation, right? And that is really, I think, something for all of us to really remember. It is about curiosity and bringing questions and learning and being open and humble to learning about the things that someone else can share, and how much greater the outcomes can really be when there is that exchange in that front, regardless of, you know, who's the leader. And you know, we always talk about, like, everybody is a leader, right? You know, truly, as when you think about it, we're all leaders in our roles and family and personal and professional. So I appreciate just a little bit more insight into that, because those leadership conversations, the chocolate conversations, which is your other book as well, right? Some really big nuggets that I think span across all industries as well as personal. So thank you for that. Stay tuned, as after a short break, Rose will tell us why sometimes things don't always add up as we believe it will. You know, sometimes 1 + 1 may equal -1. Rose will help us understand the math and the equation when we return. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Kara Olson, Chief People Officer for Ellen Becker Investment Group. My guest today is Rose Fass, Chair and Founder of Fast Forward Consulting Group. She's a author of numerous leadership books, a facilitator, a dynamic speaker, a transformational leader. I think I can go on and on, Rose, with your experiences as well. You know, in your new book, The Leadership Conversation, you describe the desired outcomes of mergers and acquisitions, as well as how they don't always add up as anticipated. Through your experiences, why do you think mergers and acquisitions fail?
Yeah, and unfortunately, more fail than not. So we had a thing at Xerox at one point where Ann had come to me and said, why do you think our acquisitions aren't playing out the way we had hoped? Because the intent when you go into an acquisition in the due diligence is to find the strategic reason you need them, or you want the customer base, or you want the revenue, or they have a talent group that you want to grab, innovation. There's always a reason. What nobody ever looks at is what makes up the people in that organization and the culture, because the culture is the way we do things around here. And the talent is the way in which that culture gets shaped. People shape cultures. So I always love this. We want the revenue. We want your customers. We love the innovation. Your people who brought that innovation and the culture you did it in, not so much. So you start to see the amazing failures that have existed, Time Warner and AOL, and we can go on and on with all of the different mergers that never work and why didn't they work. I did a little paper with my anthropologist and a college intern who's now a chief people officer for one of the big investment firms out of Greenwich, and she's brilliant. At the time, we called it the post-acquisition blues, and we interviewed. And what my anthropologist came back to me with was that the three reasons acquisitions fail are the same reasons relationships fail.
Ooh, fascinating.
Loss of identity, lack of intimacy, financial pressure. The loss of identity is, gee, you wanted me, Kara, because you loved what I brought, and now you want me to be just like you. And you want my people to change. Intimacy. I'm on the outside looking in. I've been acquired, but there's a whole group of people in the core business and I can't break in. Financial pressure, when you start overlaying your benefit plans, your 401ks, all of that, and the acquired company can't quite tolerate it. What we did learn is if the intimacy was there, the identity was cared for, they could work through the financial pressure. That's exactly what happens when relationships suffer a little. If you and I still have our identities and our intimacy is still there, we'll weather that financial storm. But when the other two aren't there, so that's in a nutshell why mergers and acquisitions fail. Loss of identity, lack of intimacy, financial pressure.
What an incredible research, right? To be able to pull that together and then really see, and so relatable, right? When you first said it, it's the same three reasons why relationships fail. I was like, I'm intrigued, right? And as you just walked through each one, right? It was like, yes, yes, and yes. And mergers and acquisitions are no different than—
They're a marriage.
It's a,
It's a marriage. And you accept this person's stuff and your stuff and you— And I, in the book, in the Chocolate Conversation, I talk about it as when my husband and I first met, I talk about an apartment story and how it was impossible for me to move into his apartment because he didn't want anything to change.
Sure.
And then when he came to my apartment, I thought I was more evolved. I felt exactly the same way. We had to go out and create a third apartment. I think it's the same way when companies create this opportunity for mergers and acquisitions. What's the third thing look like? What's that third apartment look like? It can't be our old business or their business. It has to be something that we're creating together that becomes new.
Sure.
And that's the piece. And then when Ron and I moved into that third apartment, we brought the best of what we both had and we did it. We created it together. That's what's not happening. And, you know, GE did a damn good job of it, to be honest with you. I think that was true. Even at some point, Cisco was doing a very good job of it, because what it basically did was give people the autonomy to kind of have their standalone businesses and integrate later. It really is the art of having the right conversations about the right set of things and creating that level of allowing someone to have their own identity, mm-hmm. giving them the space to feel like they belong.
Right.
And creating the financial wiggle room to grow into. You can't ask a company brand new to acquisition to appreciate immediately. That's just too difficult. Mm-hmm. And you're in the finance business, so you know that. So right. Anyway.
No, that's really helpful. As you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, how they can become more successful. So I think about, you know, an organization and your company, you know, fast forward, and how you've been able to, you know, really help companies be able to be successful, whether it's mergers or changes or transformations or what have you. How do you see companies, and do they need, you know, another person to come in, or a company to come in and really help them, right? See how to have, you know, those conversations, how to find, you know, the identity and the right culture to bring things together. You know, do you see the success rate when you are able to engage with someone who can help you through change and help you through that type of a transformation?
I think one of the key things that we do that's critically important, and you're one of them, there are people we call bridge builders. Mm-hmm. They are naturally looking to have a connection, mm-hmm. and they're in those companies. They're not always the top performers. Mm-hmm. They're the glue. They're sure. The bridges and the brokers. They're the connectors. They're the people that are willing to do what they need to do. So we go in and find those people. That's number one. Mm-hmm. And then we work partnering with those people to create the kind of inside-outside perspective that allows that person who has the institutional knowledge to use our tools and methods and our ways of doing things to kind of pull it together. So I do think help is needed. When we did the Mac Estee Lauder integration, right. We had a Canadian business with an American-born New York business. We had an old line cosmetic group working with a very young, edgy, fashion-forward company. Mm-hmm. And it was difficult. And I found people in Estee Lauder that understood that they shouldn't be doing things that way, and people in Mac that were good connectors. And we created the liaisons. I wrote about this in the book, the liaisons from those two companies to work together and be knowledge brokers and kind of bring back and forth some best practices so that one company wasn't totally dominating the other.
Sure.
They acquired Mac because they wanted a younger demographic. Then they wanted Mac to act like them. Doesn't work that way. So we try to hold up a mirror. I also would say that our methods and tools are very simple. Mm-hmm. Sesame Street simple. I don't believe in a lot of the big consulting firms, they really believe they have to bring in very complex frameworks so that you feel like you're getting your money's worth. Mm-hmm. That's not where you get the bang for the buck. Where you get the bang for the buck is in a simple method that solves a complex problem.
Sure.
And one of the distinctions, and you asked me this, what makes Fast Forward unique? We don't hire career consultants. Mm-hmm. We hire people who have actually been in the shoes of the people we're working with, real practitioners. They've had to do ops reviews. They've had to give a financial overview. They've managed a P&L. They've run an engineering group. They've had to build products, whatever the case might be, so that when we are in a corporate environment or in a company, we can speak the same language and we understand the challenges they're facing.
Right, right. That makes such a big difference, right? When you've been able to say, I really understand and can speak that same language and really help them say, you know, here are these simple tools to use to be able to help you be successful and make that change that's needed. So that's yeah. really just helpful to understand, especially when it's such a, it can be a complex relationship and how you make that successful. And it's interesting that just comes, it really comes back to that art of communication and leadership conversations and being willing to have
and
that.
Working so. Inside, outside. I think right. that's the thing. A lot of consulting firms come in and just occupy mm-hmm. or dominate. And people resent that. It's sure. like, what, do we not know anything? So finding those bridge builders, those connectors, mm-hmm. those brokers and bridgers that can go out and do those things, that's critical.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that very much. When we come back, we will find out what advice Rose has for us. You'll find out right after this short break. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Kara Olson, Chief People Officer for Ellen Becker Investment Group. My guest today is Rose Fass, Chair and Founder of Fast Forward Consulting Group. She's an author of numerous leadership books, a natural facilitator, dynamic speaker, transformational leader. I can go on and on. Rose, you have called yourself and have been in critical positions as a change agent, right? And with all the work you've done and research and experiences and the number of companies and industries that you've worked across, I'm curious to really know what lessons you've learned about being, you know, kind of a change agent and how important this role is.
Yeah. So I sometimes have to laugh, and I say this to you honestly. None of us appreciate change when it comes. I don't even like when you change my seat at the dinner table.
Sure.
I go to the same restaurants repeatedly. Mm-hmm. When I traveled around the world, I looked for what was similar to where I came from. So I like to think of myself as a change agent, but what I really think is I'm an agent for helping people face change, because I personally have had struggles with it my whole life. Moving, anything, you know, I love knowing that it's predictable.
Right.
The hardest thing about change is when people don't know where the destination is. And I think that's an important piece. It's like, if I were driving in a car and I had no idea where I was going, and all I did was just be told that I've got 100 miles more to go, I think I'd be very unhappy. Mm-hmm. So I think clarity around why we're making the change, where we're going to land if it goes well, and some of the pain I may go through in the process gives people a sense of some stability. You have to tell people also what's not changing.
Right? That's that comfort, right?
Yeah. When you ask me, Rose, what's next for you? I just embarked now on becoming the chair of my company so that I could lend the leadership, the day-to-day leadership, to two co-CEOs, Gavin and this other gentleman, David. And there's a transition going on. And what I shared with people, what's not going to change? Our culture, the principles that we stand for, the fact that we will always be life and limber and agile and able to do the things we need to do, that will always be customer first. So when people hear that, there's a sense of stability. So it's what's not going to change. The other pieces of it is to understand that we don't have to do big change. A few small changes at a time can yield significant results. And when you change too much at once, you can paralyze a system. I learned that lesson the hard way. When we tried to change all the core processes at Xerox, it was overwhelming.
Sure.
And they made so many changes, and it really took a while to get that company back on its feet. So oftentimes we will go into companies, they have this massive change agenda, and we say, let's pare this down. Let's put phases together. Let's figure out, let's test and see where we're going. That's what I love about sprints and the whole agile movement. You can learn from this. Mm-hmm. So I think even when you're a parent and you're exposing your child to change, you try to give that child a sense of what's not going to change. So I will leave you with this. In the chocolate conversation, I say there are three layers to a conversation. The worldview, how you see the world. Standards, what you have as the bar that you set for how you see the world. Concerns, unmet needs. When you come into any conversation, be it on the public stage or one-on-one, with your worldview, you are inviting an opposing point of view. Mm-hmm. You are inviting an argument. So I tell people, flip it. Start with the concern. What's the unmet need? when someone comes and complains to you, don't immediately give them your point of view. Just say, tell me why you feel the way you do and what is it that you need? Mm-hmm. Because when you can deal with that, then you can establish a shared standard that you can both live by and reframe someone's worldview. Mm-hmm. Steve Jobs did it beautifully on a regular basis when he marketed products. He understood that the world was in desperate need of entertainment during a time when there was a lot of turbulence like we have today. Mm-hmm. So he went out and he created what Sony should have created, the iPod. And he basically gave people, I never knew I needed an iPod. I didn't know I needed 1,000 songs in my pocket.
Nope.
But once that happened, he raised the bar and he changed the standard, the world standard around what music would look like, and then ultimately reframed everyone's worldview. So when you start with the unmet need, whether you're innovating or simply having a conversation, and you work your way up, standard worldview, you have a better shot at driving the change you're looking for than if you start with your point of view, lay on your standard, and just dismiss other people's concerns.
Right. No, I appreciate that. It's, you know, when you were talking about the unmet need, you know, and that when a concern is coming forward, that that's really what that is. It's so interesting when you said it, Rose. It was like, yeah, that what is a concern? It's an unmet need, right? So then that's the place to be able to work from, where you can, you know, really be able to see the change and be able to move forward.
A generative conversation.
Right. Yeah. Especially when you look at it that way. So that's a great takeaway, I think, for sure, of just how you think about change and that piece. So I know you talked a little bit about what's in store next for Fast Forward. Any projects or initiatives or anything else you'd want to share, or how our listeners can connect with you?
Well, for one thing, you can connect with all of us on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. My colleague Gavin is going to come out with a book very soon that I think people are going to really love around storytelling. And it really gets at the heart and basis of everything that you need to know to be a good storyteller. What's next for Fast Forward is we are beginning to look at how we scale. And we have a talent strategy for attracting subcontractors and alliance partners that are very similar in culture to us. And we're embarking on that now so we can get more of a global reach. Mm-hmm. And we're creating a lot of space for everyone in the company to innovate and share great ideas while keeping the basis of our principles. Be choosy, build a reputation, mm-hmm. Touch a client every day, so we're not here to play office, and never compromise on the deliverable. Those things will never change. Mm-hmm. So lots in store for us going forward. We continue to diversify.
Yeah, exciting things. Certainly happening for you and the company. I'm just, you know, kind of curious, you know, you've done so much and you've, you know, had your company for years and, you know, do you have a definition of success for yourself, for the company? And do you kind of feel like you've achieved it?
I probably, like most women, never quite feel like I've achieved it. I can say this, it's been an incredible ride. And I have learned a lot. And I now am at the ripe old age of 75. I have parents that have passed on that were bigger than life. And I realize at the end of life, what we can look at as success is what level of impact we've had on others in a positive way in a world that takes more than it gives. And I hope that that's how I'll be remembered, as someone that made a difference in the lives of people and that I was able to give more than I took. Mm-hmm. And if I go out of here with that, I think I'll be blessed.
Mm-hmm. When you started Fast Forward and how you grew the talent and why and how you really built this culture and foundation, and that will continue, right? As change is inevitable and
it
necessary.
Is.
And necessary, right? If we're not growing, right? We're dying. So we got to keep growing and keep moving
right
forward. That is for sure. So thank you for that. We look forward to seeing Gavin's book and connecting with you on LinkedIn.
Yeah, and we're on LinkedIn, and Fast Forward website has absolutely everything. And it's my last name. It's not F-A-S-T. It's FASSforward.com. And by all means, come on our website, see what we're up to, meet our people. We'd love to have a conversation with you going forward on LinkedIn, wherever you want to go.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Rose, for being our guest today. I just think you've given us all a lot to reflect and pause and really think about and conversations and how we go about that for going forward. So thank you for sharing your journey. Absolutely. Money Sense airs Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m. and on Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m. If you enjoyed today's show and want to learn more about EIG and our upcoming events, please visit allenbecker.com or call us at 262-691-3200. As always, I hope that I've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen.